This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
With vaccine development, there's a huge attrition rate in terms of where people start off from and the number of vaccines that eventually go through the different hurdles, including showing safety, including showing efficacy, which is protection against disease.
That's infectious disease expert in South Africa announcing trials for possible COVID-19 vaccine. Details coming up also. Malawians are voting today in the presidential rerun election. And the UN Children's Fund is launching a campaign to advocate for the rights of children. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Africa has launched its bid to end the COVID-19 pandemic with the continent's first vaccine trial. The announcement came today in Johannesburg, South Africa. The country has been hardest hit by the coronavirus pandemic, and scientists warn it could claim the lives of up to 50,000 people by November. The South African search for a vaccine that would prevent infection from COVID-19 is happening in cooperation with Oxford University in the United Kingdom. Darren Taylor reports.
Within the next few days and weeks, 2,000 participants at several sites in South Africa will be given the vaccine that scientists hope will stop COVID-19. The study's principal investigator is Professor Shabir Mahdi, an infectious diseases expert at Wits University. He explains that the vaccine is made from a weakened adenovirus, which is a version of a common cold.
That particular adenovirus has been genetically engineered to be such that it is unable to replicate. And I think that's important. This is a non-replicating adenovirus, which means that when given, when administered, it doesn't have the capacity to continue replicating as would occur with the virus that is alive.
Simply put, the virus behaves like COVID-19, but doesn't hold the same potential to harm and thus ensures the safety of trial participants. Mahdi says the genetic material added to the adenovirus is called spike protein. This is found on the surface of the coronavirus and gives it a spiky appearance.
When that is injected into the individual, the immune system is such that it processes that and it allows for that spike proteins to be presented to the immune cells in the body. And the immune response that it elicits includes development of antibodies.
Mahdi and his team are hoping that the antibodies which the test vaccine produces will protect against COVID-19.
So when one becomes exposed to the infection, that antibody will attach to the spike protein and prevent the virus from attaching to a human cell. In addition to which, some of these vaccines also produce cells which are known as cytotoxic cells that are able to directly kill off the virus as it enters into the body.
Mahdi says the test participants will be examined every 2 weeks for the next 12 months to establish if they become infected with COVID-19. He says early results from Oxford indicate that the test vaccine causes temporary side effects such as a temperature, headache, or a sore arm. According to the World Health Organization, 260 vaccines are being tested around the world. Mahdi says this proves that the path to immunity against coronavirus is a long one.
We would be extremely successful if even 5 of these vaccines are actually eventually licensed. With vaccine development, there's a huge attrition rate in terms of where people start off from and the number of vaccines that eventually go through the different hurdles, including showing safety, including showing efficacy, which is protection against disease.
Mahdi says unless a vaccine is developed soon, new waves of COVID-19 have the potential to kill even more people over the next couple of years than the first outbreak has. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Millions of Malawians cast votes today in the rerun of last year's presidential election. The fresh election comes after Malawi's Constitutional Court nullified President Peter Mutharika's victory in last year's election, citing massive fraud. Malawi's Electoral Commission says it expects a free and fair election this time, although few incidents of violence were reported. Lamik Masina has the story.
electoral officials said people started queuing as early as 5 o'clock in the morning Tuesday, waiting for the polling centers to open at 6. Onassis Mpepo is the commission's presiding officer at Goliad polling station in Tcholo district in southern Malawi.
We have a good number of registered voters. Turnout was just very good, and the numbers of individuals are coming in a large number according to how they registered, and they are able to vote.
The election took place as Malawi continues to register a rise in COVID-19 cases. As of Tuesday, the Southern African country had 803 cases with 11 deaths since the first case was confirmed in April. But Mpepo said all preventive measures were observed throughout the voting process.
We were provided with the hand sanitizers, masks, and we were also observing the distance, which is required 1 meter apart when they are coming to towards the additional break.
He said voters were also encouraged to use their own pens for marking the ballots. The MEC chairperson, Chifundo Kajale, told a press conference in Blanta that the voting process was generally peaceful and that 99% of the polling stations opened on time. President Mutharika was among those who voted in his home village, Goliad, in Tcholo district. The president condemned acts of violence reported in some parts of the country. In at least two locations, opposition backers beat supporters of the ruling party who they suspected of trying to rig the polls. Mutharika said the violence would likely make some people afraid of voting.
It's very, very sad that this is happening. It's obviously people who are afraid of the people that are engaging in these barbaric acts. I condemn completely.
Voters who spoke with VOA said they were happy to participate in the fresh elections and that they are eagerly waiting the results. The MEC says vote counting starts soon after voting ends and final results will be announced within 8 days as required by the law. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Tcholo, Malawi.
U.S. Ambassador to Libya Richard Norland has outlined American support for diplomacy underway through U.N. auspices to promote a ceasefire and political dialogue in Libya. He says the U.S. will deepen engagement with the full range of interlocutors from across Libya. Norland's comments came after he and the commander of U.S. Africa Command, General Stephen Townsend, met yesterday with Libyan Prime Minister Faiz al-Sarraj in Zawara, western Libya. Russia responded today calling for an immediate ceasefire. VOA senior analyst Mohammed al-Shenawi discussed these developments with Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis.
So the key thing to note here is that there are currently a range of different kind of peace processes and ceasefire initiatives underway. The UN process, which has been going on in this form since January from the Berlin process, has largely stalled, although they have restarted in theory talks in the last 2 weeks. Really, the UN process is not really going anywhere. It hasn't made any traction on the ground. The other ongoing process is mainly being dominated by Turkey and Russia, and is fronted by the so-called Cairo Initiative, launched by President Sisi in early June. Now, although they are all nominally linked and they're all paying lip service to the UN process, in reality, the UN has very little control over the negotiations and what is happening in Libya currently. Now, this US engagement, particularly at the level of the US State Department and the embassy and US AFRICOM, I think demonstrates that the US is keen to try and push the UN auspices talk, and this is because it has a very strongly anti-Russia position, and the US is very worried about Russia being a dominant player in whatever future ceasefire or political talks may come about. And I think therefore we're seeing this engagement at the level of US AFRICOM and the US embassy with the GNA to try and push a kind of peace process that doesn't have Russia as such a dominant player.
But Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov called today for an immediate ceasefire too.
Yes, exactly. And I think so what we're seeing is a number of different, particularly Russia, Turkey, others are calling for ceasefires. I think the important thing from the international perspective and from the actors that want to dominate Libya is who actually has the power, who is able to ultimately mediate that ceasefire. If it is Russia who is able to, you know, create the ceasefire and can then dictate the terms of the political agreement going forward, they will have a lot more power, a lot more sway with the Libyan actors in the country. Whereas, and again, if it's in Russia that's in control of that, the UN and therefore the US is unlikely to have much control over that and could find that a very worrying situation for it in the bigger picture strategic kind of priorities in the region.
The Government of National Accord, GNA, denounced the Arab League meeting today to discuss Turkish intervention in Libya without consulting the Libyan government. Would the Arab League play any role as a peace broker in Libya?
Unfortunately, I think it will be difficult in this particular circumstance for the Arab League to play much of a mediator role. And that's because a lot of the particularly international tension and dynamics over what's happening in Libya is a contest between Turkey and sort of a non-Arab Islamist state on the one hand, and Egypt, along with the likes of the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Jordan and others who are Arab states who are fairly anti-Islamist in their political leanings on the other hand. And therefore, from the perspective of the GNA and Turkey, the Arab League is not seen as a neutral party in this. It is seen as an entity which is going to most likely back the interests of Egypt and other LNA allies such as the UAE and Saudi Arabia in the ongoing conflict.
That was Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, and the African Union have launched the No Name campaign to advocate for the right of children to have a legal identity and access to services, including child-friendly justice. Mavis Ochera in Ghana has the story.
African communities increasingly realize that registration of children at birth is key to accelerating access to a child-friendly justice system for all African children. So the UNICEF and African Union campaign seeks to encourage AU states to quickly implement their commitment on universal birth registration. Marika Matsila, UNICEF Child Protection Specialist for the Western Central African Regional Office, says the No Name campaign highlights the importance of birth registration. It provides the first legal identity document for children so they can access basic services such as health, education, and justice. But only about half of Africa's children have a legal identity. She says the campaign also highlights the importance of progress made by African countries in improving birth registration rates over the past years. She says countries need to continue the progress so no child is left behind. Matsila notes the COVID-19 pandemic has hindered registration services as several countries have restricted movement to contain the virus. As a result, registration centers and service points have been closed, or their hours reduced and staff presence also decreased.
This campaign aims at mobilizing member state partners and donors, civil society organizations, young people and children for further efforts in making this goal a reality for millions of children that are not registered. The No Name campaign also strikes a call of caution that with the current COVID-19 pandemic, recent progress achieved is at risk of being lost, making this campaign very timely and even more important.
Matsila says the campaign also underscores the ideals in Africa's Agenda 2063 and the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child will not be achieved without protecting and promoting the rights of children as the drivers of Africa's growth. She says a child-friendly justice system looks to protect victims of crime and ensures that information they provide is treated with confidentiality and their best interests are respected.
Children need to be officially identified if they get in contact with the law. But the birth certificate also serves as an important document as a proof of age of the child that can then protect him or her from being treated or convicted as an adult in the judicial system.
Matsila says the digitization of registration services makes access to services faster and reduces the stress and cost of parents accessing birth registration records of a child child. She says in countries where services have been made digital, such as in Ghana and Namibia, registration rates have increased and birth certificates are issued more quickly. But many African countries still use manual or partly digital registration system, and most of the civil registration systems on the continent remain paper-based. She says UNICEF and the African Union have called for birth registration services to be included in COVID-19 recovery packages to strengthen primary health care, to expand innovative systems. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
Zimbabwe's COVID-19 lockdown is easing, but many people are facing new challenges, ranging from poverty to the high cost of living and many other factors. For girls, the restrictions have brought further vulnerability to abuse, particularly from relatives. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has the details.
Chipomugari is the technical advisor for child protection and safeguarding with a non-profit organization called Zimbabwe Association of Church-Related Hospitals, or ZAC. She explains the heightened dangers to children.
Children, by virtue of being children, are vulnerable to all forms of abuse. And we realize that under this lockdown period, children are exposed to violence, especially if the perpetrators are family members, because we are seeing a spike in cases of children who are sexually abused within the home setting.
Mugari says a 2017 survey they did suggests that 69% of sexual violence cases happen in homes. What's worse is that the lockdown has affected the reporting system. Ratimoyo is with Childline, a local organization that runs a toll-free line for reporting child abuse cases.
In April 2020, Childline recorded a 43% increase in calls as compared to April 2019. In the month, 95,824 calls hit our Childline system, but we only answered about 27,000 calls due to the limited capacity in our call center. At the beginning of the lockdown, we experienced reduced funding.
Moyo says that has reduced staffing and prevented operating at full capacity. She says about 1,603 cases they received involved violence against children. Mugari says while their focus is sexual abuse, that kind of abuse often comes with emotional abuse, physical abuse, and neglect. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Uganda's 2021 election candidates will have to campaign online and through the media to reach voters as part of a new rule to stem the spread of COVID-19. Uganda's Electoral Commission banned mass gatherings during campaigning, which critics say will disadvantage opposition parties and voters and may be unconstitutional. Halima Tubani reports from Kampala.
In a revised roadmap for the February 2021 general elections, Uganda's Electoral Commission says all aspirants and candidates will have to use electronic media and the internet to reach out to voters. Simon Vyamukama, chairman of the Electoral Commission, says his team will meet with the Minister of Information, the Media Council, and the Uganda Communications Commission so that the matter is well articulated and appreciated by all media operators.
We are going to take the matter up with security officers, RDCs, government at large, and make sure that these measures are effected without any hindrance.
The RDCs are resident district commissioners, representatives of President Yoweri Museveni in every district. The RDCs, along with the police, have been known to deny members of the opposition access to the media, something that has Uganda election observers worried. Sara Videte is Associate Director of the Center for Constitutional Governance, a Ugandan NGO. She says the new campaign rules put older and rural voters who are less likely to be online or have access to electronic media at a disadvantage during an election campaign.
So what happens to a rural voter that does not have access to radio, does not have access to TV or internet? And what happens to the usual characteristics of an election where people enjoy exchange of information, exchange of ideas, and voters are required to make informed decisions?
Asman Vasalirwa, chairman of the Inter-Party Organization for Dialogue that brings together all political parties in the country, says the new regulations may run afoul of the constitution.
We want to task them to explain how they are going to implement the regulations without necessarily amending the electoral laws. In our constitution, there is nothing like a digitalized election. So either we have the election the normal way, or we don't have the election.
However, the Electoral Commission argues they are following guidelines set up by the Ministry of Health to ensure the safety of Ugandans, considering the fact that the current law does not allow for a postponement or extension of elections to allow a normal electoral process. Uganda currently has 724 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and no reported deaths from the disease. Polling is to take place between January 10th and February 8th of next year as the country holds local, parliamentary and presidential elections. President Yoweri Museveni, who has been in power since 1986, is expected to have more than 20 challengers. In past elections, State Media has covered Museveni and members of the ruling National Resistance Movement to the near exclusion of other candidates. According to the Uganda Communications Commission, about 18 million Ugandans have access to the internet. However, Mirete notes that many of those are teenagers who are not eligible to vote. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thanks for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's Newsmaker Interview Program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat and dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.